Welcome to EAA Radio. It's 12:34, and I am joined with Paul. And our guest this segment is Scott Dunham, and you are an air traffic control investigator.
That's correct, for NTSB.
And what does that mean to be an air traffic control investigator? What are you investigating?
Well, any investigative team, when there's an accident, we look at all different aspects of what may have occurred, and one of the more important ones on some of them is air traffic control handling of the aircraft. For example, if they had a weather issue, perhaps if there was severe weather in the area, were the pilots provided with the appropriate information? We look at the radar tracks, we look at the communications with ATC, anything that may have affected the outcome of the event, and then we work with the investigator in charge to get that worked into the report.
So you're looking at a lot of the data that air traffic control houses and records from everything that, I mean, the radio communications, the radar tracks and everything.
Yeah, the en route facilities are, we're recording data for 15 days. They're moving to 45 now because they have new equipment, and the terminal facilities mostly are recording 45 days worth of data too. So we can go back and look at radar tracks that far back quite easily, and then we've got some other sources we can go to look back even further than that if we have to. But for the most part, we're looking probably in the last couple of weeks.
And Scott, I know your team is made up of many different specialists. When you're doing an investigation of some particular event, is it occurring in parallel with your other team members?
Quite often, on a major accident, for example, we're often the fastest source of information on what occurred. We'll go to the air traffic facility that was handling the aircraft at the time before even the flight data recorders and the voice recorders have been recovered, and be able to provide quite a lot of information about what might have happened based on the external observation of the aircraft. We can produce that sometimes within hours, and it may take longer to find the recorders, for example, so we may be the first hack at what occurred.
So what kind of things can you see from, like, the radar? Can you see if an airplane broke up in flight because of multiple radar hits, or do you not have that kind of...
In some cases, that is what we're doing. There are two kinds of radar targets. There's the one that comes off of a transponder, which, you're just going to see the transponder. If the radar allows for it, if it's equipped to see primary targets, they call it skin paint, so you'll see reflective metal and things like that. So if there is an in-flight breakup, for example, and the parts are scattered around, we can often tell the investigator in charge some areas to go look to try to recover those pieces, which could be critical to the investigation.
So are you getting away from the primary radar now?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have less and less information to actually go on in the future if you have something like that.
If it's just primary?
Yeah.
Yeah, the primary, without a transponder, you can't tell altitude, for example.
Right.
The secondary target, the beacon target from the transponder, does give you MOTC information, so we can get a more of a three-dimensional trajectory.
How does ADS-B and the implementation of that figure in with any kind of investigation? Does that give you more data?
ADS-B could really help in some cases. It won't allow you to find things like loose parts because they have to be seen by radar, but the location data can be updated much more quickly. ADS-B can provide maybe a 1 second update where a radar may be anywhere from 5 seconds to 12 seconds. They can also stick ADS-B receivers in different areas, like down in a valley where a radar wouldn't be able to see, and that would give you really good coverage because the aircraft is now reporting directly to that antenna rather than having to be in line of sight to a radar. So potentially it could provide a much better coverage over the country.
And Scott, I know that your investigation sometimes takes you outside of the United States. How do you get the same information from other agencies?
Well, that's a little tricky. Some countries have bought U.S. systems. So China, for example, has bought some Lockheed equipment, which is identical to what the FAA uses. So if we go there, we can look at, okay, it's a MEARTS, we got it, we've seen this before. If they use other vendors, Thales, for example, from France, builds a lot of equipment that's sold in different countries, and we are not particularly familiar with that because they don't use Thales equipment in the FAA. So you'll show up and sit down with the technicians and the engineers and start asking them questions. What do you record? What format does it come in? Fundamentally, a radar target is going to be a distance and direction from an antenna. It's just stored in different formats, and we have to sit down and kind of figure out, all right, what have you got? How can I use it? And work from the equipment they've had. I have worked on events in Mexico and Malaysia and other countries, and every one of them is showing up and trying to figure out, okay, what are we working with here?
And in an international event, usually there's multiple countries involved lending their expertise, correct?
Yeah, there are some, the International Civil Aviation Organization provides some rules about who can participate in an accident, and the country that built the aircraft, the country that's operating it, you know, if you have citizens aboard, there are different countries that can have an interest in an event, and typically they would all be allowed to participate.
And certainly the NTSB is well known for its investigation of the well-publicized events. Are you also involved with some of the general aviation events that occur as well?
Yeah, we do far more of those actually than the major ones, of course. The general aviation accidents are something we, you know, for us, it's a frequent occurrence that we work on many times with our local investigators. We've got people based all over the country, and they are, you know, sent to individual events as they come up. And then if they think there's going to be air traffic issues, or if we think there's air traffic issues, we may notify them. Because we find out about events through the FAA sometimes also, and we get preliminary information from them that makes us concerned that perhaps there was an air traffic issue involved, and the investigator in charge may not even be aware of that yet. So we'll contact them and tell them, hey, heads up, there's some stuff here you might need to know about. We're going to look at it for you.
What are your biggest challenges to accomplishing your mission of investigation?
Well, sometimes data availability can be iffy. You know, if the aircraft is in a remote area and there's not radar coverage available, that can make it difficult. We don't always find out, you know, about an event immediately, and sometimes the delay can be a problem. You know, if we need to go interview somebody and it's quite a bit after the event, of course, they may not remember, their recollections may not be accurate. You know, that can be kind of a challenge sometimes.
Do you usually, do you ever find that the 15-day data limitation gives you a problem?
Yeah, we've had that happen before. If we find out about something late, the data will go away, or sometimes we'll put in a request to get the data from the FAA, and it'll get dropped through the cracks someplace, and then they'll come back and go, oops, we missed that one. So we'll and then, you know, it happens. It's human. That can occur.
But hopefully with the 45-day...
Yeah, we did an extension. It used to all be 15 days until about 10 years ago, and then we did a safety recommendation asking them to extend it to 45 days so we would have less of that occurring, and it would give us more time to get into these things. And sometimes we do get queries from foreign countries. You know, if a foreign carrier is operating over here and they have an event like a, you know, they may attribute it to a near-midair collision or something, and they'll go home and they report that to their own authorities, it can take a while for that to percolate through the system and get to us. And in some cases back then, it was longer than 15 days. So by the time we even heard about it, it was gone.
Sure. So what is there any big investigations that you've been a part of recently that people might know about?
Yeah, I spent 3 weeks in Malaysia working on the Malaysian 370 accident. That was a very interesting period then.
What kind of things were you able to help them with?
Well, originally there was some uncertainty about where the aircraft was located based on radar information, and that's one of my areas of expertise. So I went over with the investigative team to help try to locate the aircraft. As it turned out, there was a lot more uncertainty than even we knew at the beginning. But you know, the original idea was that we were going to help localize a search in the vicinity of where they thought they lost the aircraft and be able to try to recover some of the wreckage. It turned out very quickly that the aircraft wasn't where anybody thought it was. It had actually completely left the area.
And do you still have a role in that investigation at this point?
Not directly. We do have people working with the Malaysians on it, but they're handling most of that internally right now. We're still going to be a party to the investigation because
it is
an American aircraft. So, you know, we'll still be involved in it ultimately, but we're not as closely involved in it as we were then.
So right now, as I understand it, you know, they basically have a general idea in the ocean where it might be. It's just where exactly it is and searching for the needle in a haystack.
Well, to some extent, there was a lot of analysis done by Inmarsat and Boeing and other countries or other companies that were involved in the communications equipment on the aircraft, trying to figure out the best information they could on what was available. The satellite communications from the aircraft back to Malaysian Airlines did give some clues on where it might have been in general, but specifically, there was no, for example, radar data past the point where it went out over the ocean. There was no GPS information being reported, so there's some indirect indications of where it might have been, but a lot of it is based on what assumptions you like to make about how fast the aircraft was flying and what altitude it was at after nobody could see it anymore. And of course, that's all based on assumptions. So, you know, if you get it right, you get to the right place. If you're off, you're not.
Yeah, and then it's also the challenge of finding it, because even when we kind of knew with the Air France incident, we kind of knew where it was, but it still took years to find it. And we had a much better starting point for that one.
Exactly. Even that one was in very deep water, and sonar scanning is not a perfect science, so they scan around looking for reflective things to sonar, but that area had actually been scanned twice before they found the aircraft. So even when you look in the right place, you might not see it, and you may need to just be perseverant at that, go back and try it a few more times to make sure you see it. Of course, the bigger the search area is, the more difficult it is to accomplish that. And in the case of the Indian Ocean we're looking at with Malaysia, there's a huge area out there that needs to be searched. So it may take more than one pass even at that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I find that a lot of people just don't grasp, the hugeness of the search area and how far away from land it is and how long it takes just to get there.
Yeah, it did. They were doing the search. They were about 1,200 miles off the coast of Australia, which is 2 hours plus even in a jet before you even start looking.
Right.
So it took, our Navy was out there with a 737 derivative, the new P-8 they've got, and they spent hours and hours out there looking around.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we do appreciate you coming in. This was Scott Dunham with the NTSB, Air Traffic Control Investigator, and you're listening to EAA Radio.